Welcome to this session in the ERA, Educational Research in the Arts podcast series. My name is Tarja Karlsson-Heikkiö. I am one of the leaders of the platform Educational Research in the Arts at the Faculty of Fine Applied and Performing Arts at the University of Gothenburg in Sweden. In this podcast today, you will meet senior lecturer Naomi McLeod from John Morse University in Liverpool, England. She is also the deputy lead for the series Research Informed Pedagogics Group. Her research has a focus on children's participation and agency, and for instance, empowerment of professionals in the research field, early childhood education. Other focus of interest in her research are questions on democracy and aesthetics, participation and sustainability, and her interest lies foremost in critical perspectives, and she wants us as early educators, I quote, to deconstruct our personal views and assumptions and embrace openness and respect for new understandings. Naomi and I have collaborated in teacher education of students in early years education and in writing several research publications through the years. Our collaboration started as an Erasmus exchange about 10 years ago. So, hi Naomi, welcome to this podcast. Could you tell a little bit about yourself to the listeners? Who are you? What is your background? And how did you end up as a researcher in early childhood education?
Hi Tarja, and thank you for inviting me to be part of this series. It's a pleasure to see you today. And it's a pleasure to talk with you about my background and my research. So I suppose my career started with a lack of an appreciation of listening to children, I'm sad to say. But as I progressed, I saw the pressures associated with neoliberalism and the pressures with accountability, particularly in England, and I began to see the importance of seeing learning from the child's perspective. And as I engaged in my master's study, I wanted to look at young children's opportunities for talk and realised that actually children had very few opportunities for talk, because it was the teachers that were doing all the talking, which then led into my doctoral studies and the importance of relationships that empower children to engage in learning that involves agency and adults listening to children and more of an appreciation of democratic learning. And this has taken me into further research that looks at the importance of critical reflection and self-awareness. And I suppose most importantly, the desire to be open to being self-aware and for personal questioning in order to appreciate a different perspective, whether that is the child's perspective, the parent's perspective, another colleague, the environment, but the importance of self-awareness in order to see our unconscious biases and appreciate another perspective. And that then has led me in all sorts of directions, but perhaps most recently into sustainability.
The concept of listening is something that you have written about a lot in relation to the upbringing and education of young children. You talked about the values behind your interest in listening, that I understand, but you have also had a long interest in the Reggio Emilia philosophy and the Reggio approach that you have had for a long time. Could you tell a little bit more about this? Because here the role of aesthetics is important, and you have lifted it up also, because it's lifted up in the Reggio perspective, the sustainability and the aesthetics. And you have been writing about these kind of methods. So could you elaborate your thoughts about your interest in the Reggio approach?
Absolutely. Reggio very much represents the philosophy that I believe in terms of empowering children as agents of change. And at the heart of this, for children to have agency, to be able to make decisions, to be able to think for themselves, to be able to follow through with decisions that they make, requires adults that listen. And so listening is at the heart of the Reggio Emilia approach. But also, of course, as well as listening, it's also important to have ways that facilitate children being creative. So a creative approach is also important as part of the Reggio approach, and using open-ended resources that encourage children to explore and to express themselves, so that there isn't a restriction in terms of encouraging them to be themselves and to engage in questioning and a deeper way of thinking. Part of that also leads into the community. Our education isn't just about education for education's sake. It's about education that is useful, that is valuable in helping children to make sense of the world and to develop skills that are needed in the world. And what better way to do that as part of the community and to work with the community, which essentially is at the heart of sustainability. And so engaging with children is an important way of respecting children, listening to children, showing children that they are valued and they are part of the community and they have a voice. And so at the heart of Reggio Emilia as well is the voice of the child. And sadly, this is often something that isn't, or rather that is missing in England. It's very hard for educators in England to truly embed a Reggio Emilia approach because of very many neoliberal pressures associated with assessment for learning. And so the creativity that is at the heart of Reggio Emilia and the adult listening to the child rather than the child listening to the adult is very different. But that creative approach where children can explore for themselves and investigate and understand their own identity, who they are, what they enjoy, what interests them, is so important in terms of having a sense of agency, in terms of having a sense of self, in terms of motivation, engagement. That has led into a lot of the teaching that I do, and using arts-based teaching and assessments to evaluate the students' learning.
Yeah. A couple of years ago, we collaborated in writing the book Empowering Early Childhood Educators for Routledge Publications in London. The book was a product of a collaboration between us in Sweden, as I participated with my colleagues, and also Finland and England. And a lot about the core in this book was about what you were talking about now. So what do you think? What is your opinion about how early childhood educators could use the kind of empowerment in their profession towards the children and the kind of democratic thinking that you were talking about in their profession?
I think this book really came out of my doctoral research in terms of the importance of listening and the critical tool that was developed with teachers. So teachers becoming self-aware and the importance of listening, and also the collaborations that I was fortunate enough to develop as part of Erasmus, visiting Sweden, Finland, Denmark, and working with a range of colleagues that I learned so much from in terms of the discussions that we had about different pedagogical, more democratic pedagogical approaches as an alternative to what is the dominant discourse in England. And for a more democratic approach to happen for children, there is the need for educators to be self-aware and to question. And through empowering educators leads to educators truly valuing and children's learning from a child's point of view and understanding the need to listen. And I suppose while it might seem that it's the educators that are being empowered, ultimately it was really about empowering educators to see the need to listen to children. So at the heart of the book is about empowering educators to question those dominant discourses, those that are associated with neoliberalism and the pressures around assessment that can squash creativity, that can squash listening to children and decision making and children as agents of change. So absolutely, the book is very much about promoting an alternative.
Yeah. And also, you can say that that was also a focus of the other book that we participated in writing that came, that was published last year in 2022. The book was Global Perspectives of Early Childhood Education, Valuing Local Cultures. And it was published by Sage also in London. The book gave the reader a broad odyssey of children's upbringing conditions in countries all over the world, including Afghanistan, Australia, Ghana, Nigeria, Brazil, Eswatini, Mongolia, Nepal, the Sami children in Finland, and the Syrian refugee children also. And the book aimed at giving perspectives and examples of rich local cultures of early childhood. And as I remember it, the work with the book was quite time-consuming and immensely delicate in many ways, because we were very many writers in the book, and it was a long process because we had to deal a lot with a lot of questions. As one of the editors, what are you proud of now when the book has been published, and what do you think that we accomplished?
You've hit the nail on the head. It was difficult. But I think it was important that it was difficult in terms of working with different contributors, because it was working with different contributors that gave it more of an authentic insight into the culture. As a white woman writing about education in Indigenous Australia or the Sami people of Finland, that would have been wrong. And so collaboration was really important. And it was the same with the first book. For me to write about Reggio Emilia in Sweden would have been wrong, because my interpretation could have been misconstrued. And it was important to get an accurate lens into what it's like. But at the same time, it's also important to understand that one person's perception is just a moment in time. And so one of the reasons with the second book, what we did was to try and give case studies of practice from different parts of the world, so that there wasn't the danger of thinking that one example was a representation of the whole of a country. because that's a very dangerous position. But absolutely, working with people was challenging, but it was important that we listened to each other and that we valued each other's contribution. And that wasn't always easy because there were different parts that different people wanted to be included. There were different parts that were maybe unclear. When I started to edit, I had to make sure that I didn't take away the essence of the text. And so there was a lot of going backwards and forwards and making sure, and that wasn't always easy, particularly when you're dealing with indigenous cultures and you're working with different languages as well. So it was important to try and be sensitive and to try and listen carefully as well.
Yeah. Now you touched another question that I have, because you have been an editor for many, many publications, both for Routledge and Sage, which are international publication sources. And you talked about the difficulty of being in the role of editor. But what is interesting about being an editor in these kind of publications when you're collaborating with a lot of people in different countries and so on, and you have to deal a lot and you have to solve a lot of problems and so on. But what is interesting in it? Why do you do it and why do you like doing it?
I think ultimately I like working with people. I think I've come away from both books a lot richer in terms of understanding myself and also understanding the importance of relationships, really understanding the importance of listening. And I suppose it's also appreciating people's feelings as well. It would be a lot quicker to write on my own, but the collaborations are very rich. I mean, we have known each other now, is it 2015? So we've known each other.
Yeah.
As a result of the collaborations and, you know, our writing has followed through as a result of those. And some of those conversations have been tricky, but it's been important to follow through with them because that ultimately shows respect for each other. And ultimately, as you go through life, you realize that we face challenges, we face difficulties, but actually working through those difficulties because there is an underlying respect for each other is really important. And it's been a life skill, really, that has developed as a result of engaging in the writing process. So it's been a really valuable experience.
It's getting to know each other, but it also deepens your understanding as a researcher.
Yes.
You have a very broad perspective in your part as a researcher, but in your research, you also have highlighted critical reflection as a tool for development, for transformational change in just professionalization. And as I understand it from your article, Reflecting on Reflection from 2015, you mean that questioning of taking for granted assumptions is important in professional development. And you have also written about professionals in early childhood and that we need to constantly develop our methods and didactics. What is your perspectives on this need of continuing professionalization as a teacher and as a teacher educator and a researcher?
Well, Tariya, it underpins the whole of my teaching and my ongoing research. With the students that I work with, that I teach, the need to be self-aware is so important in terms of being aware of wider neoliberal pressures and the need to be open, aware of personal views in order to support children is at the heart of teaching and learning ourselves. So Self-awareness and critical reflection is important for future educators, but is also important for sustainability as a way forward. Until we are self-aware of our own biases, we can't see who we are, what we are, and appreciate another perspective. So an awareness of those unconscious biases is so important in order to see differently and behave differently and appreciate other perspectives, and in particular, the environmental perspective. So critical reflection is hugely important as part of my teaching and also my research. But also that has moved into appreciating the need for sustainability and being aware of the social, cultural, but the wider economic pressures that are at play in our societies, and the need for creative arts-based flexible approaches with students to help them see those connections as well.
Yeah, I have seen your teaching in England, and sometimes it's a struggle with these young students to work sustainably also in the educational, from an educational perspective, not only to lift up the ecological perspective, but also the educational perspective of sustainability, to have a sustainable educational situation. And the critical reflection that you are talking about, it's not so easy to make these young people to understand it, what is behind the need of being critical, but because they want their studies to end, they just want to make their higher education credits and go out and meet children. But I think it's so important with the critical reflection on what you're doing. It's not easy to educate that. What is your way of getting this in-deep reflection with the students?
I think particularly in England, we have reaped what we've sown. And the education system in England is very much about learning outcomes. We tell our young people, our students, when we're planning, we know what the output is going to be. And so a lot of our learning is based around knowledge rather than skills and understanding and conceptual learning. And so young people that come to universities are not used to questioning. They're not used to asking, what do I think? What are my personal views? What are my experiences? They're just used to being told. And so trying to encourage students to have an opinion is a starting point. Trying to encourage students to question and not just accept what I tell them as truth is the starting point. But it's hard because they've had the whole of their lives, more often than not, being encouraged to just absorb knowledge in order to pass exams. And sadly, in universities, the focus is very much on assessments. And so if a taught session isn't linked to assessments, students often don't see the point of attending. And what we find is the more creative the assessments, the more concerned students get, because it relies on them interpreting the assessment rather than being told exactly what to write. And it's scary, but the focus of my teaching is very much just on encouraging students to question and being aware of their personal views, however basic that is. And so a lot of my teaching now incorporates philosophy for children, where there is a lot of questioning and a lot of asking whether I agree or whether I disagree and why. So it's a very basic starting point, but it's important.
So this serious research-informed pedagogics group that you are in, that you are a leader of, is that a forum that you talk about these things? Or what is this forum for that you're a leader of?
The Centre for Educational Research Group is the university centre for educational research, and there are three research groups. And the research group that I am the deputy for is the Research Informed Pedagogies Group, which is very much about working with educators, particularly teachers, to encourage research and to encourage teachers as researchers to engage with schools and with teachers to look at alternative approaches, and so that we can work with schools as well to look at what their needs are and to engage in research with them.
In Sweden, sustainability has become a very, how to say, there is a big focus on sustainability in Swedish preschools. And a lot of preschools in Sweden, they want to be toxic free, they are ecological, they want to use materials that are ecological, they want to eat ecological food and so on. What is the situation in England? Is there an awareness of these kind of things also in England in the preschools?
There is an awareness of sustainability. It tends in the main to be environmental. So when we mention sustainability to educators, it tends to be associated with picking up litter or the environment. And to a certain extent, and most generally, the social, cultural and the economic pillars associated with sustainability are not recognised. But until we are able to appreciate the interconnected nature of sustainability, sadly, the teachers are not even able to focus on the environmental side of sustainability, because the pressures to teach phonics and maths are so great that there isn't even the chance to teach and to spend time looking at and learning about the seasons and the environment. But the focus tends to be the environment rather than the interconnected nature of sustainability.
What is the focus in your research about sustainability? What is the message that you would like to send out to your fellow researchers and to teachers in early childhood education?
I suppose sustainability is the way forward. Sustainability and the interconnected and awareness of the wider pressures that make our teaching so oppressive are important, which is why our personal questioning and reflexivity is so important. The need to question these wider systemic forces that are ever so explicit but implicit in our lives are important. So self-awareness of what is actually happening is so important in order to realise that teachers effectively are being done to by policymakers in order to resist and to be able to question how right and ethical approaches with young children that are just very transmissive rather than democratic are, if we want to have a world in 50 years' time. So sustainability needs to be seen as more holistic in the way that we interpret it, such as the school that we are researching in Wales that looks at sustainability as an embedded approach to young children's learning, so that all three pillars are incorporated.
Now we have discussed a lot of your research, and I really want to thank you for this lovely discussion. Is there anything else that you want to take up before we stop this discussion?
I think just to say that it's lovely to be able to engage with you, Taria. It's always lovely to touch base and just to ask if my interpretation is accurate. I know that it's lovely to know that I can contact you and say, have I interpreted this right? And just that I appreciate our relationship and hope that we can continue to engage in research together.
We will write about sustainability, I think. So thank you, Naomi, for this lovely discussion.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Tom.